This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Petraeus Crocker Iraq hearings moved to the House side of the Hill. Hillary Clinton's top strategist is out. Did he jump or was he pushed? A new candidate explores a race for president and a senior Democrat apologizes to John McCain. It's Wednesday and time for our weekly visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us for the latest on the presidential race and other political news. A bit later in the program, we'll focus on the curious campaign stop yesterday on Capitol Hill, when all three of the major presidential candidates quizzed General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker on Iraq. But that's hardly the only political news of the week. There's a new member of Congress. An old member of Congress may seek the Libertarian Party's presidential nomination. Senator Rockefeller apologizes, and Senator Vitter may be called to testify. If you want to get in on the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the hour, when is a kid old enough to travel alone, and does the equation change if home is New York City? But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. His mom dropped him off here this morning, as usual, and he has a trivia question for us.
This is a convoluted one, actually, and I'm going to have to read it because I tried to write it so many different ways. Let's see if it makes sense. When was the last time in the same year someone was elected president who came from the same state of the NCAA men's basketball tournament winner? In other words, like if Bob Dole were elected president this year, and of course Kansas won the tournament on Monday, so that would be the same time, same state presidential election. So when was the last time? Neil, can you help me out here?
So the state which last saw an NCAA men's basketball champion and a favorite son elected to the White House in the same year.
Somebody who came from that state, right.
If you know the answer, or think you do, 800-989-8255. You can also zap us an email, talk@npr.org.
And hopefully somebody can call and explain the question to me.
Maybe your mom. And in a season where polls and supposition and spin, money often count as news, we had actual votes cast in an actual election yesterday.
Well, yes, it was the election in California's 12th Congressional District. That's where Tom Lantos died in February. He was the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He was 80 years old and already announced he wasn't running for re-election. But the woman who won it yesterday, former state senator by the name of Jackie Speier, a very interesting story. Speier had once worked for Lantos's predecessor, Leo Ryan, and it just so happened they went to Guyana in 1978 when there were stories about mistreatment of cult people mistreatment of people who were part of the Jim Jones cult in Guyana. And, of course, Leo Ryan and four others were killed at the airport tarmac in Guyana. Jackie Speier was seriously wounded. And here she is, all these 30 years later, coming back as a member of Congress, Democratic
and
member of Congress.
She will then be forced to run again in November?
Yes, she has a primary again in, she has a primary, this is just to fill Lantos' seat. She has a primary on June 3rd, but of course she'll win that, and it's a solidly Democratic seat, and it adds another superdelegate to the list of superdelegates for the Democratic nomination.
Hillary Clinton's top pollster and strategist, Mark Penn, is out?
Well, good question. It sounds like a baseball question, but of course, Mark Penn, while he's a top strategist for Hillary Clinton, also as the CEO for Burson Marsteller, the global public relations firm, was lobbying on behalf of the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, which, of course, Hillary Clinton, the candidate, strongly opposes. It was an embarrassment for the Clinton campaign, and Mark Penn either was pushed out or resigned. But the question is whether he actually has resigned because he's still doing polling for the Clinton campaign. He's still advising the campaign. He may not be the top strategist. And so the question is whether he was pushed aside just to satisfy blue-collar workers in Pennsylvania in advance of the April 22nd primary, because you don't want having a pro-trade person advising the campaign.
Also, another representative, causing some embarrassment to a campaign, this time Jay Rockefeller, the senator from West Virginia.
Well, Jay Rockefeller was had an interview with a Charleston newspaper, West Virginia newspaper, the other day, and he said something about John McCain when he was dropping laser-guided missiles when he was a Navy pilot.
From 30,000 feet
from
over
30,000
Vietnam.
He didn't care what happened to the people. He was gone before the effect of what happened on to the people there. And, of course, Obama disassociated. Barack Obama, whom Jay Rockefeller supports, disassociated himself from the remarks that he disagreed with it, and Rockefeller made the latest apology. There's been a lot of apologies in this presidential election. Rockefeller made the latest one.
Let's see if we can get one of our trivia answerers on the line. Again, the number, if you think you know the answer, is 800-989-8255. Patty's with us. Patty with us from DeKalb, Illinois.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
I think it was 1992 when Bill Clinton won and Arkansas won the NCAA.
The answer is wrong, because Arkansas won it in 1994. It would have been perfect had Arkansas won it in 92, and that would at least you understand the question. But no.
I understood the question. Yeah, nice job.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks very much for the call, Patty. And so as we move along, these situations, we talk about politics. Let's go to the local level, the state of New Jersey. Frank Lautenberg, now very senior senator from the state of New Jersey, is running for re-election this time around. Of course, he's a very, very wealthy man and has financed his own elections from time to time, but may face some interesting competition.
Well, it is, of course, not from the Republican Party. The Republican Party seems to keep shooting itself in the foot. The last candidate to announce, he announced from Vail, Colorado on Easter Sunday, and of course, he doesn't even live in New Jersey. He has an apartment on Central Park West, which I assume is part of New Jersey or part of the eastern part of New Jersey. So the Republicans haven't won a Senate seat in New Jersey since 1972. Frank Lautenberg is 84 years old, though very vigorous and very, you know, he's still with it and very, you know, as you know, he's very alert and everything like that. It's not like a Strom Thurmond question. But Rob Andrews, the congressman from southern New Jersey, I think from the 1st Congressional District, has announced he will challenge Lautenberg in the June 3rd primary. And a lot of Democrats are very upset about that. They wanted Lautenberg to just have free sailing to the nomination. Of course, he would have free sailing to another term in November. But Andrews is ambitious. He's waited a long time. And he thinks that perhaps that it's time for new blood in New Jersey. But there may be blood in the primary between Andrews and Lautenberg because it's going to get very ugly.
And the Democratic Party has, in recent years, tried to be focused on the idea of we need to gain control or expand our margin in both the Senate and the Congress. And these kinds of Democratic primary races have been relatively rare.
Yes, that's true. And of course, it's been a long time since a sitting member of the House has been able to knock out a sitting incumbent. I think it does not jeopardize the Democratic control of the seat in New Jersey, just like I'm not convinced that the fight between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton will jeopardize their chances in November. But it doesn't help them, especially when they're hoping to advance and increase their majority.
Let's get another potential trivia question here. Joe joins us from South Bend in Indiana.
Is it Nixon and Woodens teams, either 72 or 68?
Nope. UCLA did win it in the 60s, but not when Richard Nixon was elected in 1968. And so the answer is no. It's not UCLA or Richard Nixon.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. They both did win, just not in the same year. All right. Thanks very much, Joe.
It's nice to mention Mr. Wooden's name on national radio anyway.
Mr. Wooden is an honored member. We'll mention him anytime we can.
97 years old, and he didn't attend the UCLA in the Final Four, but he was watching.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Joe.
Also, Wooden was a Boilermaker.
Well,
and beat Purdue in the finals in 69, I think.
But I don't think anybody won from the state of Indiana that year in the presidential election. Though John Wooden, you're right, elected to the Hall of Fame, College Basketball Hall of Fame, as both a player and a coach.
But it needed to mention it. Boiler up.
All right. Thanks very much.
Whatever happened to President Vance Hartke of Indiana? No, I'm sorry.
Never mind.
He was not president.
2 weeks to Indiana. Is this looming
2 weeks
now?
To Pennsylvania.
To Pennsylvania,
right.
Excuse me. And is this now looming as make or break? Is this again, going to be the primary that decides the Democratic nomination?
I think not. And I think not because so many times we keep saying that. We were saying this as early as New Hampshire, that if Hillary Clinton does, which was about 3 years ago, as far as I can remember, that if Hillary Clinton does not win New Hampshire, it's over. And, of course, she won New Hampshire despite what all the polls said. So there are new polls that have Barack Obama, again, slightly narrowing the Clinton's lead in Pennsylvania, which is April 22nd. But she says she's going on through the convention, even if she loses. But she will win it. It looks like she will win it. She's doing very well with women, with white ethnic voters who are still concerned about Barack Obama and Jeremiah Wright. So, but the question is, what happens on May 6th, 2 weeks after that, when she could suffer a tremendous loss in North Carolina, but she's favored in Indiana. So I think the race continues.
Let's get another caller on. Tom joins us. Tom calling us from Minnesota.
Yes. Is it Eisenhower in 1952?
So that would have been Kansas again.
Well, actually, I don't remember. I know that Kansas won in 1988, and it may have won in 52, but there's somebody more recent than that. That this is the last person to represent from the state that won the NCAA men's tournament, men's basketball tournament.
And the presidential election.
And the presidential election the same year. More recent than Eisenhower.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Let's see if we can try. This is Dennis. Dennis with us from South Dakota.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
UCLA and Ronald Reagan in 1980.
Nope. UCLA was won it in 1975 before Reagan was elected president, and in 1995 after Reagan was in office. So it's not UCLA, and I'll give you a hint, it's not California.
Dennis, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And let's go now to Elaine. Elaine with us from Simsbury in Connecticut.
Hi. Well, this may be a stretch, but... George Bush was born in Connecticut, and UConn won in 2004.
And that is the correct answer. It was a trick question.
What do I get?
You get George W. Bush for several more months.
Oh, God, no.
George W. Bush was born in New Haven, Connecticut.
Right.
People always think of Texas and things like that, but it was a trick question. And when I heard that, when Neil just announced that you were from Connecticut, I said, uh-oh, I think we have a winner here.
Great.
Elaine, thanks.
Be sure to tell my husband.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Coming up, more political junkie and a theater critic. That's right, Dana Milbank, the Washington Post reporter and political theater critic, will join us to review the Petraeus hearings. And, of course, we'll take more of your calls, 800-989-8255. You can send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Political Junkie segment, it's the talk of the nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Political Junkie Day. Ken Rudin is with us. And if you're a true political junkie, you spent the day yesterday with your eyes glued to General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker as they testified before two Senate panels about Iraq. And they had some familiar senators asking them questions.
The administration and supporters of the administration's policy often talk about the cost of leaving Iraq, yet ignore the greater costs of continuing the same failed policy.
I do not want to keep our troops in Iraq a minute longer than necessary to secure our interests there. Our goal, my goal, is an Iraq that no longer needs American troops. And I believe we can achieve that goal perhaps sooner than many imagine. But I also believe that the promise of withdrawal of our forces, regardless of the consequences, would constitute a failure of political and moral leadership.
Nobody's asking for a precipitous withdrawal, but I do think that it has to be a measured but increased pressure and a diplomatic surge that includes Iran. Because if Maliki can tolerate as normal neighbor-to-neighbor relations in Iran, then we should be talking to them as well. I do not believe we're going to be able to stabilize the situation without them.
Senators Clinton, McCain, and Obama making a strange campaign stop on Capitol Hill yesterday. Today, the Petraeus-Crocker hearings moved to the House side of the Capitol without the extra added attraction of presidential candidates. Washington Post national political reporter Dana Milbank joins us by phone from the Rayburn House office building. Dana, nice to have you on the program again.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And, of course, we want to hear from callers as well. Will the candidates' positions on the war help them or hurt them? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Dana, did any new information emerge from yesterday's hearing?
Not particularly, but that didn't stop us from killing many trees and putting out some papers to divulge all that non-new information. But the detail I focused on was that although the players remain the same, we have located a new enemy.
First, it was the Ba'athists and Saddam Hussein. Then you'll recall Al Qaeda in Iraq. Now we're very concerned about something called special groups.
Special groups supported by Iran.
Yes, particularly supported by Iran. A special group sounds like they might qualify for the special of the day or the group rate or something. It sounds rather benign, but in fact, Petraeus said this is the primary threat now to the Iraqi government. Who knew they were not even talking about special groups when these guys were here 7 months ago?
And he was also talking about them as the people responsible for a lot of the recent violence in Basra and in parts of Baghdad, too.
Yes, I think the sort of layman's definition of special groups is people who are shooting at us. Since they wanted to separate that from Sadr and the Mahdi army, because they're not at the moment shooting at us, so they want to say the ones who are shooting at us are in fact special groups.
For those who've never had the experience of watching one of these high-profile hearings on Capitol Hill, senators get up and they have, 10 minutes to interview the witnesses, in this case Ambassador Crocker and General Petraeus. But often they tend to use about 9 minutes and 55 seconds of that time posing one question.
Yes, well, if you're the chairman of the ranking member, you get to give sort of an opening statement. So McCain had that benefit yesterday.
As the ranking Republican on the Armed Services.
Exactly. So, but if you are lower down in the totem pole, you don't get to do that. So you basically have to make your opening statement during question time. So, but fortunately, when you're a presidential candidate, you're given a little bit of leeway. So I think actually Obama and Clinton were both supposed to limit themselves to 7 minutes, but spent more like 15 giving lots of speeches, although they did manage to fire off a few questions.
But the anticipated fireworks did not develop. Though, for example, Senators Clinton and McCain both serve on the Armed Services Committee. They did not interact with each other. In fact, was Senator McCain even in the room by the time Senator Clinton got her turn to question?
No, that's right. Senator McCain got out of there about as fast as he could within a few minutes of finishing his questioning, which still left an hour and a half or so before they got all the way around to Clinton, who, after all, is a fairly junior senator. So she sort of obliquely responded to his statement, but he was probably having lunch at that point, so it didn't much matter. And then Obama had, there were two hearings, and Obama was in the second one all by himself. So it wasn't the expected debate, but it did allow for them to sort of do the audition. Could they pass what Clinton has called the commander-in-chief test?
Dana, it's Ken Rudin here. Obviously, I was watching, as a lot of people were, to see the three presidential candidates. But what I came away with was that a lot of Republicans are very nervous that this war, that there was the famous light at the end of the tunnel, and that it is clear that, from what Petraeus and Crocker had to say, this will remain a key campaign issue for the fall campaign.
You know, I think that is right, and you could tell there's a palpable difference between when these guys came here last September. It was treated like, the hero's welcome. You expected them to be carried in on a chariot and wearing robes and all that, but this time they're mere mortals, and they're coming in for heavier criticism from the Democrats, but the Republicans aren't celebrating them the same way they were. I think it's sort of the end of the affair here.
I mean, McCain actually asked serious questions about more penetration of the green zone, of the fact that more desertions from the Iraqi army. So he was actually...
He had a rather bellicose opening statement, but yes, he was. He wanted to be seen as measured, and the Republicans in the House are doing the same thing today. They're not just sort of beating the drums for these guys as they did last time.
Aren't the Republicans and Senator McCain also banking on the idea that, though I think it's now 70% of the American public thinks it was a bad idea to go into Iraq, nobody seems to have a clear idea on how to get out.
Well, of course, they never follow the public opinion polls, but that is an interesting coincidence that you point to there, Neil.
Of course, they never pay attention to the public opinion polls. As one of the questions about that commander-in-chief test, Hillary Clinton has spent now a fair number of years on the Senate Armed Services Committee and seems to have developed a fluency with military terminology and at least some comfort with the idea of addressing these issues.
Well, I think so. I mean, of the three of them, Clinton probably distinguished herself the most in the questioning yesterday. You had McCain, who sort of briefly mixed up the Sunni and the Shia, and then you had...
Again?
I did it one more time yesterday, yep. corrected himself very quickly, but you could see that, you know, this could become a problem for him. And then Obama mixed up Iraq and Iran, which is also problematic, but we think it was just a slip of the tongue. But Clinton really, and she's done this in previous hearings, she's proven herself to be an adept questioner. She really had Ryan Crocker, the ambassador to Iraq, squirming as he answered questions on a relatively arcane point about bringing a measure before the Senate for approval. But she has distinguished herself. Now, does that mean she's a great commander-in-chief, or does that mean she should stay right where she is and keep asking questions in the Senate?
Dana Milbank, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Of course, Ken Rudin, our political junkie, with us as well. 800-989-8255. Robert joins us on the line from Cincinnati.
I think the Democrats are too measured myself. I mean, the Green Zone is being bombed daily. What's going to happen if there's a kind of like Marine in Lebanon situation where there's hundreds of Americans lost because of some kind of dislocation in the Green Zone? How would General Petraeus respond to that, and why are Democrats not asking more forceful questions and emphasizing this is a complete fiasco?
Dana, Democrats were considerably criticized about General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker's last appearance in September. Were they tougher on him this time around?
They were. You know, remember the last time around, the whole thing was sort of colored by that ad from the liberal group MoveOn that said, General, betray us. And I think that sort of caused the Democrats to be on the defensive over that ad, and they may have held back a little. I think it's certainly tougher this time. You know, the fact of the matter is they're just sort of, venting because everybody knows that they're going to have no say in this until at the very least January of next year, because as long as these guys have the backing of the president, then they've demonstrated there's nothing they can do to change it.
Robert, thanks very much.
Thank you.
One other item, Dana Milbank, before we let you go. You're not just covering the House Iraq hearings. There's an interesting trial that's about to get underway here in Washington.
Yes, it is. It has begun already. I spent the morning at the trial of the D.C. Madam. This is the alleged leader of this alleged prostitution ring that seemed to have caused some embarrassment for Senator Vitter and the Deputy Secretary of State and some others. But it was mostly just sort of a sad procession of prostitutes very much regretting their previous behavior this morning. We could draw some obvious similarities to the way the lawmakers are behaving on the Hill, but that wouldn't be nice.
Is Senator Vitter going to appear as a witness?
They say he's going to take the fifth, so they may not even call him in. But certainly all of us journalists hope they'll go through the motions anyway.
And just the image of the senator taking the Fifth Amendment on the stand at such a trial, his opponents would pay big money, I think, to just have that tape.
Well, I think so, but don't forget he comes from Louisiana. It's a common business down there.
Dana Milbank, thanks as always for your time.
Thanks very much.
Dana Milbank's most recent book is called Homo Politicus, The Strange and Scary Tribes That Run Our Government.
There's a great quote. David Paterson, the new governor of New York, at his first press conference, he was asked if he frequented prostitutes because that's what brought down Elliot Spitzer. And his answer was, no, just lobbyists, which is kind of interesting.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Glenn. Glenn calling us from Oakland in California.
Oh, yeah, you said that a congressman was going to seek the nomination for the Libertarian Party. I don't know if you've touched on that yet.
Well, we're hoping you would touch on it for us, Glenn.
Well, I don't understand. In California, we had our primary, and there were a handful of Libertarian candidates. Was this person on the ballot?
Bob Barr is his name, the former Republican congressman from the state of Georgia. And Ken Rudin, how is Bob Barr hoping to become the Libertarian presidential candidate?
Well, he just in the past month, first of all, he left the Republican Party in 2006 to become a Libertarian. In the past couple of weeks, he announced, or I think this week, he announced a exploratory committee running for president, and he has a website and all that stuff. Now, there have been Libertarian primaries, and the Libertarian National Convention is May 23rd to the 26th in Denver, where they will anoint or nominate a candidate. But Bob Barr or Mike Gravel, now Mike Gravel, the Democrat who's running for president, now says he will continue his presidential candidacy on the Libertarian Party as well. The thought of Bob Barr fighting Mike Gravel for the same party's nomination is just, you know, mind-boggling. But there have been other candidates. There are several other Libertarians in the race. But ultimately, it will be up to the delegates in Denver next month who will pick the nomination.
So the primary process is just part of the process. It's the convention that will decide the
nomination. Which used to be in this kind of the major parties, too. In 68, you know, you think of old Bobby Kennedy and Eugene McCarthy running in the primaries, but ultimately that had nothing to do with it, and Hubert Humphrey got the nomination.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Glenn.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. We're talking with political junkie Ken Rutan. 800-989-8255 is our phone number. The email address is talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Nancy. Nancy with us in Berkeley, California.
Hi. Yes. I just wanted to comment that I think Mr. Milbank's comment about perhaps that Hillary's competence means who knows whether she's president or stay in the Senate. It seems to me like if she were a man, everybody would be saying that she should, that would make her a good president. So I just wanted to comment on that. That's the kind of thing that happens to competent women all the time. You don't want to be promoted because you're really good in your current job.
Mm-hmm. So you see this as part of a pattern?
I think it happens a lot. I don't think it's explicit. I just think it happens a lot with women who are very, very competent that they, you know, let's not promote them. They're really, really good where they are.
All right.
And I think, you know, Hillary should be president if she's the most competent. Why not?
Well, it helps to have the most delegates, too.
Yes, well, that helps, too, and it would help if the Michigan vote would count in the anyway, but let's not argue, so thanks a lot.
Thanks very much for the call, Nancy. Boy, Michigan, Florida, has anybody figured this out yet, Ken?
And in fairness, Dana Milbank did say that of the three presidential candidates, he thought that Hillary Clinton was the best question.
Florida, Michigan, still in limbo?
No, of course, Hillary Clinton keeps talking about it as if it will happen. But, of course, the Barack Obama people, it makes no sense for them to want to revisit it. And besides, the rules were that they were punished if they moved out their primary up to January. They did, and so they're suffering. But, obviously, Hillary Clinton would love to have a revote or some kind of resolution of those two states.
Philip with us. Philip calling from Louisville in Kentucky.
Yes, Ken. I was wondering what the reasoning is that the supplemental spending bill for the war is not part of the budget and how that's an extra expenditure.
A lot of the spending for the war is not a part of the regular Defense Department allocation. It's a special extra supplementary item that's added every year by the Bush administration. And, well, Ken, a lot of people think that this is simply a ploy to hide the real cost of the war in addition to the many billions of dollars that the Defense Department gets that everybody knows about to build things like airplanes and tanks and submarines and stuff like that. Expenditures for the war are presented to the Congress on a separate line item, and they vote on that.
Right, but Democrats, there was an earlier call wanting to know why Democrats were not fighting the war. Or more, and that's one way of fighting it, of course, would be cutting off appropriations. They have not done that. But from watching the hearings yesterday, I did not watch anything today, but from watching yesterday, it seems clear that nothing is going to change, certainly until the presidential election on November 4th.
Democrats do have majorities in both the House of Representatives and the United States Senate. We know in the Senate, well, you need an effective majority of 60 votes to get anything done under the rules of the United States Senate. The House of Representatives can pass things by one vote.
You're right, and a lot of times there's a lot of pressure on Nancy Pelosi from the left flank of the Democratic Party saying be much stronger on the war. And there's a lot of dissension within the ranks saying that they're just not doing the job they were supposedly elected to do when the Democrats took over the Congress in 2006.
But aren't there a lot of, moderate Democrats who vote for all of these expenditures for the war anyway? The Speaker of the House may not have a majority on this issue.
Well, that's very true. And, of course, there are a lot of Democrats nervous about either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama leading the ticket in November, and some polls show that perhaps anywhere between 15% and 30% of Democratic voters, depending on who the nomination is, could switch over to John McCain. So they're very nervous about having politically sensitive votes in this very political year.
And the one thing that is a complete unknown at this point, and was mentioned, I guess, earlier in the broadcast, what happens on the ground in Iraq? Does the situation continue to improve and thus maybe help Senator McCain's chances? Does it deteriorate and thus potentially help whoever the Democratic candidate's going to be. We don't know what's going to happen in
November. That's true. And for some polls where I've seen that the war is not going to be a key issue in November, I disagree completely. I still think that no matter what the economy looks like, the fact that that American men and women are still dying there, it has to be an issue. It will be an issue. And it will make or break either the Democrats or Republicans winning the White House in November.
NPR political editor Ken Rudin is with us every Wednesday on our Political Junkie segment here on Talk of the Nation. Next Wednesday, we're going to do a special broadcast from the museum. We broadcast from there yesterday. So the Political Junkie goes to the museum next Wednesday on Talk of the Nation. And Ken, I'll look forward to seeing you there.
I have to dress up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And tell your mom about it. Coming up, Lenore Skenazy left her 9-year-old on the first floor of Bloomingdale's and told him to find his own way home, a New York City-style walkabout. Next, I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.